Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
This is the honey badger. Watch it run in slow motion. It's pretty bad. Look, it runs all over the place. Whoa, watch out, says that bird. Ew, it's got a snake. Oh, it's chasing a jackal. Oh my gosh. Oh, the honey badgers are just crazy. The honey badger has been referred to by the Guinness Book of World Records as the most fearless animal in all of the animal kingdom. It really doesn't give a sh**. If it's hungry, it's hungry. Ew, what's that in its mouth? Oh, it's got a cobra? Oh, it runs backwards? Now watch this. Look, a snake's up in the tree. Honey badger don't care. Honey badger don't give a sh**. It just takes what it wants. Whenever it's hungry, it just, ew, and it eats snakes? Oh my god, watch it dig. Look at that digging. The honey badger is really pretty bad at. They have no regard for any other animal whatsoever. Look, and it's just grunting and, ew, eating snakes. Ew, what's that, a mouse? Oh, that's nasty. Oh, they're so nasty.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Honey badger don't care. Honey badger don't give a...
Welcome back, Honey Badger.
Thank you. I thought if on my return, we had to go back to Honey Badger.
Oh, it's been we haven't used that one in a while. I haven't
played it in a while, so I thought that...
Oh, that's nasty.
It's never old. It never gets old.
You can just...
It's always funny.
Oh, you know, maybe we'll just do a whole show of Honey Badger someday. We'll just do the whole show. Yeah, I'm back. You know, it's funny.
We missed you. We did.
Did you guys have fun?
We did have fun.
I want to thank Beth.
A little nervous here and there, but we had fun.
I know. You know, it's you think it's a piece of cake here.
No, sitting in the driver's seat. I respect the big chair. Not you, the chair.
Just the chair.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, and I walk in the door here, and we're getting ready to go on the air. Heather pulls out her phone, and she goes, look at this picture. And I realize suddenly there's dead air here. There's nothing going on. Oh, let me hit that. So if I'm highly distractible, the person who distracts me, and she's showing me a picture of a rainbow.
Yeah. You take pictures of birds on wires outside your backyard. I thought a rainbow would be a nature pic kind of up your alley, especially one over the south side of Chicago. They need all the rainbows they could get.
That's true. It's tough sometimes on the south side of Chicago. Yeah. I'm highly distractible, but you're my distraction.
Yeah.
What can I tell you?
That's why we work
one
so well.
One of the yeah, I guess so.
It balances out.
But I want to thank Beth Botts for being here last week. You know, I have to tell you, I don't know what's going to happen next week. I thought I was going to my high school reunion. I'm not sure.
I really want to. You should go category. They're special.
Well, you know what? I'm old enough so that if we do it again in 10 years, nobody's going to recognize anybody anyway. This is like the last chance when people are still sentient. And I want to see. And the other thing is most of them are probably retired. And here I am.
You're a workaholic.
I'm starting my career. They're going to say, well, what are you doing?
I think if you retired, though, you'd be so bored, you'd go out of your skull.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
These guys who play golf every day, for one thing, playing 18 holes of golf every day is exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how people play 18 holes of golf. I don't know how to play golf.
Play golf, so.
I've played 9 holes twice this year and was exhausted both times at the end of
it. Is it just the fresh air or yeah, just lugging the clubs around?
Oh, the fresh air is killing me.
Yeah.
I love being in here.
With all the dust and everything?
With the dust and the radio stale air. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's But that's not true either, because last week on Saturday went out to Churchill Park at the Glen Ellen Park District for National Public Lands Day, and Kathleen and I had a great time. What a beautiful setting. And Renee Frigo and the folks out there, I want to thank. And you need to go to my website, mikenovak.net. On the homepage we have Kathleen's latest endeavor, the latest slideshow, and it's of National Public Lands Day at Churchill Park. Lots of cool photographs and goofy music. And the goofy music, of course, is because it's royalty-free. It's in the public domain. There are various ways you can do that. You know what? For folks who do that on YouTube and put these things together, we haven't really investigated some of that stuff. We've been sort of going back into the public domain thing.
Mm-hmm.
You realize, of course, that public domain, the concept of public domain, is going to go out of existence.
Mm-hmm.
It pretty much already has.
Yeah.
And you know what caused that? I think we talked about it on the show before.
I believe we did, but it's not leaping to the front of my
1927,
mind.
1927, with the birth of
Mickey Mouse. I was going to say, isn't he supposed to go public soon?
You think Disney's going to let Mickey Mouse go public?
By law, they're supposed to.
Do you think they care about the laws? Do you think Disney cares about laws?
I think certain things about Mickey Mouse will go public, and then, no,
do you think
they don't care about the laws.
Do you think big corporations care about anything?
No.
Why do you think we have people occupying Wall Street in Chicago?
Yeah. Why do you think we have Barb starting off the show with us today, Barb Miller of Landreth Seeds, because we're trying to help her save her company.
Exactly, from the big banks and the
yep.
big business. Well, it's
yep.
actually not a big bank so much as a note to somebody that, we'll ask her about it. But that's see, maybe you don't distract me all the time.
See, I do my job so subtly.
Maybe she's looking at the cheat sheet here.
It's
like, look at this, Mike. It says right here, Barb Malera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from Landreth Seed Company. She's going to be back on. She's got a great story to tell, and it involves this show.
The feedback we've gotten has been so amazing. So
It has been, and mm-hmm. I want to thank all the folks who listen to this program and who follow me on Twitter and
yeah.
Facebook and the website. You guys have stepped up big time, and now you got to do it again. And part of the reason I'm having her on early in the show today is because I had her on the second hour before, and I know that people listen at different times, and I want to expose another group of people to what her situation is and the whole idea that this 228-year-old company is in danger of going out of business. It's one of the oldest companies in America, and they sell open pollinated and heirloom seeds. And I got my garlic sets and my onion sets from them this week and the catalog, which, of course, I left at home.
Mm. Speaking of the catalog... You know, I saw they had Michelle Obama on a lot of specials that were coming up, like season starters, and she was working with, like, the makeover show that they'd redo the houses, and they built a whole garden, and she brought seeds from her garden, and they were, like, all big about building this garden and greenhouse, and that was part of her pet project on the show. We need to send her a Landreth seed catalog, I think. Because didn't Barb tell us that the last president to buy from Landreth Seeds was Roosevelt?
You know, I would be surprised if somebody hadn't already done that. In fact, let's get
yeah.
Barb on the phone,
okay.
And we'll ask her that, because that would surprise me if somebody hadn't sent one to the Obamas. And then in the second hour, of course, Rick DeMaio, the bottom of the hour, talking about, I guess some of you had frost last night. You're welcome to call in and tell me about it. I saw this map along the lake. It looked like Chicago, no frost, and everybody else frost. Well, actually, a little bit of Indiana, too. Lake County was not supposed to get it, but looks like it might have been cold enough in the area last night for us to get a frost. And Barb's going to tell us, apparently, they're looking at a freeze warning, and so she's scrambling today to get stuff, so I won't mm-hmm. keep her on the phone too long. But Beth and Jody Osmond from Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm, for those of you who are omnivores, who like your meat occasionally, but like it sustainable, They will be on. You know, I have to admit, I do like to eat meat.
I do too.
But I don't like what it's doing to our country.
No, I don't.
One
either.
Of the things I discovered last week, one of the things I said in my talk to out at the Churchill Park at in the Glen Ellen Park District for National Public Lands Day, I did a little research and found this guy who'd done a little research about how we use our land in America. There's 1.9 billion acres of land in the United States, and that's the lower 48. 1.9 billion acres. Do you know how many million acres are used to grow fruits and vegetables? Well, okay, let me put it this way. For cropland, that's corn and soybeans mm-hmm. and that sort of thing.
How many million acres do I think that there are?
There's like, for the cropland, it's over 300 or 400 million acres.
Mm-hmm.
How many million acres do you think are used for vegetables, the ones we put on our table?
Half.
3 million.
Get out.
3 million acres.
And how many are for cattle grazing?
About 400 million.
They can't see my face on the radio, but that was a very discerning look.
and the point was, we could take that land, and a lot of people say that, you know, when we talk about restoration, the way we use our farmland is talked about in a benign way, you know, like that's okay. But it's not. And especially because so much of it goes toward meat production.
Mm-hmm.
If we, as a country, just stopped eating. We don't have to stop eating meat. If we ate less meat,
mm-hmm.
if you went meatless for a day, a week.
Oh, I've done that. I do it all the time.
But if everybody did this and didn't think you had to have a McDonald's for breakfast,
mm-hmm.
you know, lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
We could open up all this land to restoration and native habitat and biodiversity in a way that we don't right now. And a lot of people think that this guy, and I have to find his name because I don't have it right in front of me, made the case that we talk about urban sprawl and how that's ruining our country and how it's gobbling up all the land. Well, in terms of land percentage, our urban areas are about 6%,
mm-hmm.
whereas the grazing is like 40%.
Mm-hmm. And they're just grazing devouring it.
What?
And they're just devouring it.
Right. And when you eat all that stuff, well, it's not growing.
Well, the cows are eating all that stuff, and then we're eating the cows, and yeah, it's kind of a vicious cycle. And then you can get further into it. You can get, you know, the ones that have been given the hormone injections. And
well, you know, the antibiotics.
They've been eating the genetically modified alfalfa. And
folks,
what, yeah.
all you got to do is watch, what was that movie that came out? Those are various foods.
Yeah.
I'm talking about even the Hollywood with the movie about the contagion.
I haven't seen Contagion.
I haven't
yet,
either,
yeah.
but and I know it's not about antibiotics, but at some point it will be, folks.
Yeah.
We just keep doing this and pumping these animals full of antibiotics.
I was grocery shopping yesterday and I was grabbing the organic stuff and they're like, that costs twice the price. I'm like, but yes, it's got half the junk in it.
And that's part of the deal.
Yeah.
Also on the program today, so speaking of Open Lands Day and Churchill Park in Glen Ellen, we have Stephen Packard, who's kind of an environmental icon in the Chicago area. And actually, he's known nationally, too, with Audubon Society Chicago. And he's talking about a first-of-its-kind volunteer initiative at Deer Grove East in Palatine. Next Saturday, October 8th, and we'll explain what that's about. And I'm very happy to have him on the show later on. And then later, and if you go to my website, one of the first things you see up on the upper right-hand side is this map of Chicago. And
I was curious. Are those our zones?
Those are our recycling zones
Ooh.
In Chicago. The managed competition starts tomorrow. And I will have a few words to say about the managed competition. It doesn't – hey, you folks without blue carts in Chicago, don't worry. You still don't have them. Just letting you know, you still don't have them. Are you going to have them soon? Don't know. But the city is starting – well, I'll explain later about where recycling in Chicago goes, and it starts tomorrow in the city of Chicago. That being said, let us go to line one. All of my guests are on line one because they are number one. And that, and among them, Barbara Malera, who is the owner of Landreth, D. Landreth Seed Company. Do you mind whether it's called D. Landreth or Landreth? I see it said different ways.
Not at all, Mike. Landreth, D. Landreth, the D. Landreth, whatever you want to call us is fine.
Okay. The D. Landreth Seed Company. How are you, Barbara?
Just great. And before we start the discussion, Mike, I want to thank you especially for giving us a chance earlier in the month of September to tell our story. I want to thank each and every one of your listeners for all the orders we've gotten from your show, the emails, the comments on internet orders, the letters that people actually penned and sent snail mail, the phone messages, and especially to all of you who mentioned the Mike Novak Show, because then we could give feedback to Mike about how unbelievable the response was from the listeners of his show. So thank you so much for this help.
My pleasure. I'm grateful to my listeners and the folks who follow me in other ways, and the fact that they have stepped up so much is really heartening. You have to tell the story of
the 97-year-old.
Yes, this is a great story.
I would love to tell that story. One of the most charming experiences we have had through this campaign is a 97-year-old man who called and said he had heard about our plight on the Mike Novak Show, and he wanted to buy a catalog for his son, who is 70, so that he could plant some heirloom seeds next spring. Very, very special phone call.
He's still trying to teach that young punk how to grow.
But that's the ultimate gardener. That man has the soul, the heart, the hands, the mind of a gardener. 97 years old, and he's buying a catalog for his 70-year-old son.
Oh, that is fabulous. And you've obviously had stories like that from across the country. Heather was talking earlier before you got on the line, so you probably didn't hear it. Has anybody sent this information to Michelle Obama in the White House?
That I don't know. I have no idea about that.
I mean, really, think of the publicity you could get if the Obamas picked up a catalog. And by the way, I need to let you know, I got my catalog just the other day with my order, my garlic sets and my onion sets. And of course, I forgot to bring the catalog in.
Okay, but wait. That is our old Bob catalog. What we are doing to give people an idea of the quality of the work that we do is we are sending them an old Bob catalog. This is a catalog that we normally do for free in the fall. You haven't gotten the catalog. It will come at the end of November. We will begin shipping the catalog at the end of November. So most people will receive the catalogs they're ordering in early December. And Mike, if you'll give me a second, because a number of your viewers brought this up. The catalog is $5. That includes shipping. That's the total amount you are charged. $5 includes the price of the catalog and the shipping.
So that's a great deal.
Yeah. Usually it's $19.95 plus shipping and handling.
Right, and you'll get two.
Yeah.
Right away.
Exactly. So what we need to do is, again, I know because this is radio, not everybody has a computer, even in the 21st century. So let's give out the phone number right now because I want folks. All right. As Barb and I talked the other day, and I said one of the great things about her being back on the show is I'm sure there were people who heard your conversation with me several weeks ago and thought, I want to do something. I want to send out some money and buy a catalog and help this 220-something-year-old company survive, and then forgot to do it. Now's your chance to make up for that because this pitch, this pledge, this program, this what do we call it?
Campaign.
That's the word I was looking for. Is still going on. So what is the phone number?
Okay, Mike. The phone number is 800-654-2407. And hopefully we'll mention it a couple more times before the end of my segment of your show.
We're going to mention it one more time right now. 800-654-2407. And see how dumb I am. I realize I put this whole thing up on my website today. If you go to this week's show at mikenovak.net, And I put all the links for your company in Facebook and Twitter. Did I put a phone number? No, because I don't think like that anymore. But you need to think like that because people do call. And so one of the things I will do, either Kathleen will get on it right now or I will do it when I'm off the air, is add the phone number, 800-654-2407. Now, if you mention the Mike Novak Show, well, you're not going to get anything extra, but you're going to make me look really good, which is what I really appreciate.
That's what you like.
That's what I like.
And we will get back to Mike with how many people do mention his show. This can only help him.
Exactly. That's the way I'm looking at it. But let's talk about the numbers right now. Let's explain to people who haven't heard the story before how much money you needed to raise and where are you right now?
Okay. We were trying to raise $5 million to sell a million catalogs at $5 a catalog. Of that $5 million, it would cost us $3.5 million to print the catalogs and to ship them. That would leave us with about $1.5 million left, which we would then use to pay off all of the debt that has been incurred. The problem debt amounts to $425,000. So we need to get beyond that $425,000 to get out of the immediate circumstances. Ideally, it would be great if we could pay it all off, but we definitely have to pay off that $425,000. Now, we have raised $130,000 in 20 days, selling catalogs $5 at a time. Many people have ordered more than one catalog, but the average sale has been around $20. So for those of you folks who say, I can't help with a $5 catalog sale, I say to you, oh, yes, you can, because there are thousands of people who have bought a $5 catalog from us at this point, and every one of them has helped us enormously. So please, we really appreciate a $5 catalog order, and we're getting there. It's amazing when you think that a little tiny company with very limited reach has been able to sell $130,000 worth of catalogs and some product in a little less than 30 days.
That's absolutely amazing.
It is.
And yet, you need to continue to do the work. Now, one of the things that you mentioned to me and that I've put on my website, wouldn't it be nice if a big company decided to buy, I don't know, 200, 300, 1,000 catalogs and send them to their employees as, say, oh, a holiday gift? Wouldn't that be just fabulous? So I'm going to encourage companies like that out there to call Landreth at 800-654-2407, sometimes known as D. Landreth Seed Company, sometimes known as the D. Landreth Seed Company.
And it is the oldest company in the United States, isn't
it? Is it the...
No. It's the fifth oldest company in the United States. It's the oldest seed house in the United States. And of the five oldest companies in this country, it is the only one that is doing exactly what it was doing when it was founded.
Wow. Well, see, the tradition
continues.
Carries on. It continues. And so the question I have to ask you is how do you keep up? And somebody asked me, do they have a million catalogs to send out? How does that work? Let's say you do get a million catalogs sold.
Okay, that actually, Mike, there's an easy answer to that. Currently, we are talking to two printing houses, one located in Baltimore and one located in York, Pennsylvania. Both of them have the capacity to print the million catalogs. Yes, that's not the problem. The problem is getting the orders for the million catalogs.
You do need the orders. So get the orders in, and the rest will follow.
That's right.
So, again, the numbers, I feel like we're doing a telethon here. 800s. Let's get the big tote board, except because they took it away from Jerry Lewis. So,
yeah.
In fact, they took Jerry Lewis away from Jerry Lewis. So we have our own tote board, 800-654-2407, if you want to call Landreth Seed Company and put in an order. You can do it right now. Are operators standing?
No. Operators, and please... I would again ask your listeners to understand this. Our guys at the warehouse have been putting in between 80 and 100-hour weeks for the last 3 weeks. This weekend, I said, you got to go home and rest because we're going to start making silly mistakes. We'll be there starting at 8 o'clock on Monday morning, and we're there from 8 in the morning until 9 at night taking phone orders. But they need it this weekend to get some rest because of all the time they have been putting in. So please forgive us for that. But
you know what, Barb?
We have to take that time.
Your employees are soft. They are so soft. Oh, all right. Hey, but people can call right now and leave a message, right?
Oh, they absolutely can, and those messages will get returned on Monday. Absolutely. Mike, let me give you an idea of the scope of what's happened since your radio show and a few other things that happened to us during the month. We have had orders from every single state in the union. We have had orders from people as young as 16, their parents calling on their behalf, and as old as the 97-year-old gentleman from Michigan. We've had orders from men. We've had orders from women. We've had orders from Democrats. We've had orders from Republicans. And you can. And your next question is going to be, now, how did you know they were a Democrat? Because they immediately say, have you called the White House about this? And you could say, and how did you know they were Republicans? Because they immediately say, have we called Fox News about this? So, it has the story and Landris has reached out to just about every faction, every group that we have in this country.
And I was thinking, Heather, and you would appreciate, in fact, you can help me do this, because Heather works here, unlike me, she's here during the week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking this is a Tom Hartman story.
I know.
And we got to get this information to Tom Hartman.
Absolutely.
Because he has millions listening. He has, you know, a few less than listen to my show. And,
just a few. I'm keeping a straight face.
I know. We're about to fall down here on the floor.
Okay. All right. It's all right. Over. I'm okay.
Sorry, Barb. This is the way we roll.
I think it's great.
But seriously, we need to talk to him. I'll tell you what, 773-838-9278. Have you put in an order to D. Landreth Seed Company? Give us a call and say hi to Barb and buck her up because you know she's given up and she's given her employees the weekend off. It means it's
there's football to be watched today.
I guess so. She's waving the white flag there.
Like you do 52 personal days a year. They're called Sundays.
But hey, I don't get Sunday off.
Neither do I.
Okay, well, there you have it. 773-838-9278. We'd love to hear from anybody who's ordered one. And like I said, I got my I'm glad that's just the bulb catalog. It's beautiful, though.
Oh, thank you. Well, the bulb catalog has a lovely story behind it because when we created the bulb catalog, we didn't have any photographs to give to people about the things they were ordering. And we found that the International Bulb Center in the Netherlands has a library of illustrations that go back to the 1400s. And they were willing to lease you the rights to use those illustrations for a specific use, like in a catalog. And so those illustrations that you see are as old as, I think the oldest ones we chose were the 1500s up to the 1800s. And they're beautiful watercolors of the bulbs that we sell. Not all the bulbs that we sell, but a selection of them.
And we had a question here, so I'm gonna pose it to you because you're the expert. You're the one selling the bulbs. It just came in on Twitter. Those garlic and onion sets, can I grow those over the winter, or is Mike just way ahead for spring? That was the question. And Barb, you would answer that by saying...
You need to put them in the ground now. You grow them through the winter, and the garlic you'll harvest at the end of June and early July. The onions that you start in the fall, you can harvest probably as early as May. So that's your first crop of onions. You're then going to plant a second crop of onions in the March to April time frame, and you can plant a third crop of onions in June if you want to have onions year-round.
There you have it. See, you can get onions any time of year. And yeah, and actually, why? That's why I got the garlic sets, because I've not grown garlic before, and I said, this is the year.
Oh, and boy, will you be tickled. What you have to do with the garlic, there's a curing process. So once the stalks are two-thirds brown, you're going to dig them up with the bulb attached to the stalk, and you're going to hang it in an area where there's no sunlight, but there's good air circulation. That will cure the bulbs and will allow for a longer shelf life. But when you pull some of that garlic up, eat it right then. It's like no garlic you've ever tasted before.
Really? Now, what about garlic scapes?
Garlic scapes, people use them for lots of different things. I know a lady that's just growing her garlic now purely for the scapes. If you let the garlic go to scape, you can sacrifice some bulb size, not necessarily always. But
explain what a scape is.
The scape is the bulb stalk. So a garlic will grow up a stalk that has leaves on it. But then towards the end of its season, it will throw up a very unique-looking stalk with a bulby end to
it. It looks like an arrow sometimes.
Yeah, it looks like an arrow. That's a good way to describe it. That's the flower. You don't want the garlic to flower. So that stalk with its bulb on the end is called a scape. It's highly regarded by florists. Lots of people chop them up and use them as chives. This one lady makes pesto out of hers, and she chops them up and makes a garlic pesto.
Ooh, garlic pesto. Yeah. All right. Hey, listen, we do have a phone call. Let's go to line two. Bring in Nancy from Chicago. Nancy, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi. I was thinking that she might be flooded with calls tomorrow, and I was just wondering if there's an address that we could send a check to and request a catalog.
Now, that's a good question.
What a great question. Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad you heard that, Barbara. I know Nancy's a little low there. Not your fault, Nancy. Phone's
okay.
Here.
Nancy, can you hear me? Can I give her the address?
I'll tell you what. Can you hear her, Nancy?
Yes, I can.
Okay, go.
Okay, 60 East High, H-I-G-H Street, number 4, New Freedom, 2 words, Pennsylvania, 17349.
17349. I missed the initial address, the number address for High
Street. Okay, let me do it one more time, the whole thing. 60 East High, H-I-G-H Street.
Okay.
Number 4, mm-hmm. New Freedom, 2 words, Pennsylvania, 17349.
Okay, I have it.
And I will repeat that for folks who might have a hard time hearing that. It's 60 East High Street, H-I-G-H, number 4, New Freedom, Pennsylvania, 17349. Now, of course, they can order online too, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's www.landreffseeds, you have to have an S on the end of seed, .com. It's LANDREFSEEDS.com.
www.landreffseeds with an S, .com, and of course that link is on my website, MikeNovak.net. You can go there and check it out or do it there or call 800-654-2407. So thank you very much, Nance, for the call. And I assume you're going to get yourself a catalog.
Yes, I am.
All right, fabulous.
Thank
we
you,
really
Nancy.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Uh-huh,
bye. Before we let you go, you said you had something you wanted to read to us from the catalog. What is it, from the bulb catalog or the regular catalog?
No, this is from one of our, what is it from? It is from some correspondence that we received a couple of years ago. It is from a 1936 Bristol, Pennsylvania paper. And the point I wanted to make is that Landreth has always been an incredibly responsible corporate citizen. During the Depression, they donated a building for a school. They created jobs. And one of the things that they did was to fund a AAA baseball team. Of all the things that we've received phone calls from telling us stories about Landreth, this AAA baseball team has pretty much dominated the list of topics. And people over and over again told us that throughout the 1930s, in the community of Bristol, one of the things that brought that community together and helped them to get through the Depression was being able to gather on a Saturday afternoon and cheer their hometown team on. It gave them hope. It gave them a chance to think about something other than the tragic circumstances that they were living through. But it also gave them hope that that team would win that week. So a couple of years ago, a gentleman called and said he was cleaning out his father's papers, and his father had worked for the Landreth Seed Company for many, many years. Let me read you the advertisement that his father had saved for the better part of 70 years. It starts out, Bristol, Pennsylvania, July 6, 1936. Special, which is the equivalent of breaking news. Home Run Klein smote an arching liner into the faraway spaces of the outfield. The Landreth player raced into deep right, jumped, missed the pellet, and fell sprawling into a field of Landreth, Southport, White Globe onions. The fielder groped in vain for the baseball among the smooth, white onions. Catching a glimpse of the opposing batsman rounding second, the desperate fielder uprooted the nearest onion, tore it off at the stalk, and threw it into the mitt of the impatient catcher. The onion was quickly applied to Chuck, that's Home Run Klein, as he slid for the plate. The umpire waved a hand skyward, "You're out!" as catcher Purcell tucked Landreth's beautiful Southport White Globe onion in his pocket and thanked his lucky stars that the farmer had used such good seed when planting his field. Thanks, Mike, and thanks so much to your listeners.
I didn't think we were going to get a baseball reference today.
That's fantastic. I love that idea. Scrambling for it and you can't find a ball, you got an onion.
That's
Mother Nature provides.
And when you're talking about baseball in Chicago, it's just as well. With the best we could do.
Maybe if we had onions in the outfield, it would have been better.
That's the name of the new book,
Onions in the Outfield.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Barbara Landreth from Malera Seed Company. We're going to keep in touch with you, folks. I'm telling you, I got these beautiful garlic bulbs this week and onion sets, just you could smell it. As soon as you open the box, the odor sort of wafted through the room. Beautiful catalog. I can't wait for my real catalog. Again, 800-654-2407. You can go to www.landrethseeds.com or 60 East High Street, number 4, New Freedom, Pennsylvania, 17349. And once again, I am encouraging the bigger companies out there, put in a big order. You could make a huge difference. I mean, what a great Christmas gift. You know, instead of getting some stupid tchotchke.
Or soap set or something.
Or, yeah, you know, whatever you're going to do that somebody's going to throw away. Give the gift of garlic or give the gift of seeds. Give the gift of keeping a 228-year-old business in business. So, Barb, we'll talk real soon.
We sure will. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I had a question about preparation for the soil with garlic. It'll grow under a variety of soil conditions. Free draining loam with lots of organic can work. You know, you can build your soil with green manure cover crops. But, of course, you can... Just do the sort of organic material added to it before you plant, and compost and composted manure are popular choices. Of course, if you're using manure, make sure it's mellowed for a while before you plant your garlic. But you know, from what I understand, I've seen garlic grow in a lot of different places, and it does pretty well. I get the idea that it's not one of those plants that's really, really fussy. Rick DeMille weather coming up in a sec. Today we're going to revisit one of my new favorite words in the Mike-tionary. Some people have dictionaries. I have a Mike-tionary.
Yeah, that's one thing you have.
Ow. Meow.
A Mike-tionary?
A Mike-tionary.
Wow.
Actually, it's a Mike English dictionary, in case you can't understand what I'm saying.
Up there just with William Shakespeare, aren't you?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Linguist.
If Shakespeare had been alive, he would have come up with the term burr-composterific. Don't
yes,
you think?
Yes, he would have.
He would have. And of course, that describes the one and only cotton burr compost from Back to Nature. Cotton burr compost is newer in this neck of the woods, relatively speaking, but it's been used as a soil conditioner in the South for over 200 years. Famous for its ability to loosen clay soil, the organic mixture, which consists of composted cotton burrs. I mean, there's something you could put in with your garlic before you put in your garlic. They feed the organisms that feed your soil. It improves moisture retention in sandy soils, keeps harmful organisms in check. And unlike wood and wood-based compost, it will not tie up nutrients. And it's affordable. Dr. Wally at Pesci's and Jennifer Brennan at The Chalet, we all love Back to Nature products, so give them a try. Back to Nature Cotton Burr Compost is available at Wheaton Nursery in Wheaton, Illinois. The Chalet, as I mentioned, in Wilmette. Hawks Nursery in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Back to Nature. Life doesn't start with the seed. It starts with the soil.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. As we head into fall, we start thinking about fall and winter storms, and we'll see if any are on the way when Rick DeMille talks to us in a second. If you have mature trees in your yard, you just might want to have the Care of Trees phone number handy. Why? Well, they can't restore the power after a big storm, but they do have 24-hour emergency service, and they can take care of your damaged trees. Many people don't understand how dangerous it is, how dangerous it is to remove or prune storm-damaged trees yourself, especially if a tree falls on a car, other structures, power lines, or even other trees. The Care of Trees promises 24-hour... No, they offer... Well, they promise, too. I don't even know what I'm looking at here. 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. That's the important part, is that this is a great company. They do their – I love watching them work, and I know when I watch them work – they're going to do it professionally and safely. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment, too. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. A few simple changes in your lawn care practices, like using Milorganite Goof-Proof Organic Fertilizer, can result in a carpet of green safe for your kids and pets. Start by raising the mowing height of your lawn, if you haven't done so already. Taller grass is better able to compete with the weeds. Mow often, removing only one-third of the total height, and leave the clippings on the lawn. Consider using a push or electric mower. It's good for the waistline and the environment. Further improve your lawn's health and greatly reduce weed problems with proper fertilization. Milorganite's organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn your lawn, even in hot, dry weather. Plus, you don't need to water it in. And the non-staining iron helps maintain the deep green color, even in the heat of summer. So join the professionals and home gardeners who've trusted Milorganite for over 80 years. Use Milorganite for better results naturally. Available where garden supplies are sold.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, we got a little bit of Twitter love here for Heather.
I didn't think I was that catty.
I said meow, and it was followed up on Twitter with meow. Snap, Heather.
I'm just, you having your own dictionary just boggles my mind, because the thing is, I think you could probably pull it off if you really wanted to.
I probably could.
Yeah.
It would be scary.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm sorry, Gina, but she writes in, she says, okay, just tuning in. What the heck am I listening to? Story Hour? Yeah, well, you missed a little story about baseball and onions and garlic.
I told her that we had Barb on. So, I tweeted back.
You did not miss Rick DeMaio weather, because he's here. Rick, good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you guys.
Now, you sound a little low there.
No, I can hear you.
There you go. Okay, good.
I was finishing up the gulp of coffee when the good morning came out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who got frost this tonight?
Oh, very little, Mike. This was really not that big of an event from the standpoint of cold weather is concerned. Matter of fact, looking at some of the morning low temperatures, DeKalb 36, Elgin 35, McHenry 32. So a little bit of frost up in McHenry County. Ottawa 37, Mundelein 36. I think O'Hare made it down to about 30 to 39. Valparaiso 37. So this was basically a non-event, as I kind of mentioned a couple of days ago. When you have too much wind across the area, which is what we had, we still had about 5 or 6 miles per hour last night. The air mass just doesn't get cold enough this time of the year, particularly when you have that water of Lake Michigan still at about 55 degrees. Matter of fact, the temperature on my balcony overnight never made it down below 54 degrees.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm 50 feet away from the lake.
Warmer near the lake.
What is that, Heather?
No, I'm just saying warmer near the lake.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's the kind of neat thing about Lake Michigan this time of the year, is it extends the growing season probably about a good 2 weeks to 3 weeks in some areas. In fact, the average date of the first frost right along the Cook County, DuPage County lines about October 14th. But if you look at a microclimate map, Mike, the average date of the first frost within about a mile of the lake is about November 4th. Isn't that amazing?
Well, you know what? You sent me that map.
Right.
I didn't
send you the real microclimate map.
Not the micro. Oh, can you send that to me, too?
Yeah, I can get that to you. I kind of found it late last night. I thought it was a little bit too late to send it to you, but I figured I'd talk about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. We can pop it up there. Yeah. I'd love to see the microclimate map, because what I did, if you go to my homepage, mikenovak.net, under Rick DeMaio's photo, there's a box that says Illinois Interactive First Frost Map.
Mm-hmm. That's a different one. That was one that I thought was a little bit better, because now you can, they've designed the map that you can kind of go into your particular neighborhood and you can zoom in and zoom in and zoom in. You can get to that. So that November 4th data is in that particular map. There's another one that I can say, but I think that one's a little bit better because it's interactive. The other one's more of a static map. But, I still think the more we look at, small-scale observations, the better we can get information to people. And I think the better we can also, I think, make forecasts. Because what I don't like is that I still think some of the local forecasters don't really understand the importance of a microclimate in Chicago during this time of the year. They'll say, oh, we can get some frost in the suburbs. Well, to me, Evanston's a suburb, Wilmette's a suburb, Winnetka's a suburb, so why don't we still consider the North Shore part of the microclimate of Lake Michigan and stop just saying the suburbs? Where, Mike, you know it better than anybody, you can go about 10 miles west of Buckingham Fountain, and or I think it's 8 miles. You're still technically in the city of Chicago when you get out to the far western areas of, say, Norridge, just south of that area, and sometimes you're colder out there in the city than you are along the North Shore. So I just think we need to, I think if we give people this information, they'll go, wow, that's really cool. I never knew that, as opposed to just saying warm in the city, but no, frost in the suburbs, blah, blah, blah. I think it's about time we kind of up the ante a little bit, don't you think?
I want you to name names. I want you to debust people on this, okay? Tell me who's information.
I'm not going to say Jerry Taff and Brent Miller.
Meow.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to say that.
Well, but you know, while you're talking about this, I do want to mention to folks that if you did not get frost last night, if you got frost and you were caught off guard, well.
Yeah, it wasn't a killing frost.
That's it, shame on you.
It wasn't a killing frost. No,
but the point is that this is probably most people dodged the bullet, and they might not have been aware of it. But it means that if we do get frost, you can still protect your plants if you've got vegetables, and you, as I note later on in the show, often. When you get the first frost, you get warm weather after that.
Oh, exactly. And that, Mike, that's a great point, because the only way you can get frost is if the atmosphere does what we call a ridge trough setup, is where you have a real deep area of low pressure, bring you a lot of clouds, a lot of rain, and then you get the cold air behind it. But usually, after that, as you mentioned, we get into a very mild pattern. That's basically what we're going to get into. So I think typically, you know, people kind of throw in the towel around here once you get to the first week of October, but you can actually still have container pots on your balcony or on your backyard, you know, still having, you know, flowers and vegetables, not probably tomatoes so much.
But you can even cover them. See, the point is, if you put some sort of covering over it, if you know there's going to be a frost, newspapers or a light blanket, obviously, you know, you don't go get your down comforter, or some kind of row cover, anything that's light that will keep the frost off. And then when the weather warms up, you remove it, you'll get more growth, and you don't have to lose those tomatoes yet. And it's been a frustrating tomato year for a lot of people anyway.
Right, a lot of variability, yeah.
Yeah. So,
and, you know, the important thing to note is that the soil temperature, which is interesting, I always like to talk about this. This morning, the soil temperature, as measured by Bill Johnson, one of the Weather Service retirees out in Streamwood, 4 inches below bare soil was 53 degrees, and up at the Chicago Botanical Gardens, as well as down in Romeoville, both places showing 52 degrees. So the root system of the plants are still saying, hey, you know, I still have some Wheaties left in me. Let's produce some energy back through the trees, or at least through the, you know, through the branches and the stems and the flowers and the leaves, and still get something going here.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've noticed, but some of the flowers or some of the gardens around Buckingham Fountain downtown, Mike, just look absolutely fantastic. I've never seen such variety in some of the city's gardens downtown along Michigan Avenue. Then along Lakeshore Drive. It really looks spectacular.
Well, I believe it's because while he's training for the triathlon, Mayor Rahm Emanuel goes out with fertilizer and pruners, and he keeps everything in tip-top shape.
Yeah.
Well, there is a politician joke in that, you know. Fertilizer, he is a politician.
Yeah, well,
what's he full of?
He's
that's why they're so pretty.
Okay. But while I've got you here, something else you sent me was about the trees and color.
Oh, yeah. You know what, and this actually came from the University of Illinois Extension. They were mentioned about the fact that we've had such a variety of weather conditions this year, particularly down in Champaign. When I was down there about a month and a half ago, I was amazed at how brown the lawns were down around the campus of U of I, because they were in particularly a much drier period than we were up here in northern Illinois. And then they had extreme weather conditions from a standpoint of heat and humidity. And the trees are actually, kind of kicked into their turning phase color-wise about 2 weeks ahead of schedule in most areas. And if you look around, you see a lot of yellows beginning to come through. That's probably about a week ahead of schedule, mainly because we've had a lot of variety of heat and humidity and rainfall and then drought. And then obviously we've had a fairly cloudy cool period as well. So if you're looking to go out and do some peeping, as they say back in the Northeast, I think this weekend is probably the best weekend to do it for areas of southern Wisconsin. Northern Wisconsin is already completely turned, Mike. They're already at 100% peak, which is about a week ahead of normal for them.
Isn't that interesting? Because the rest of the weather earlier in the season was a week or two behind.
It's been very strange. It started out late. It kind of ended early. So we had kind of a, I don't know, from my perspective, we had a very short summer. It just kind of ended right around Labor Day. Next thing you know, you went, wow, it's kind of gone.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and you kept waiting for, like, are we going to have another week of warm weather, another week of warm weather?
And in fact, in that regard, I don't know if you remember, but the first 90-degree day, I believe, was May 30th.
The first 90, yes, exactly, the first 90-degree day. And then we had two 90s, the 1st and 2nd of September. We had heat index values close to 100 degrees, and then it just dropped like a rock. And we've been basically about 2.5 to 3 degrees below normal, as well as wet. So it's been a cool and a wet September, without a doubt, Mike.
So what happens at this point? September has been, you know, I always say it's the best month of the season, and I've said that repeatedly, and
yeah.
I was proven wrong this year.
And I think we got kind of shortchanged, because I know we got about a minute left for the forecast. We got shortchanged for both the month of June and the month of September. And then July and August were nice summer months, outside of July being very hot. But it looks like right now the first 2 weeks of October look very warm, very dry. Temperatures today obviously starting off on the cool side. So sunshine, low to mid-60s today. Normal high is about 68. But by the time we get to the end of the month, the normal high is only 56. So we're looking for temperatures 60s today, but then 70s, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, maybe even into Friday. Still a little bit of a hint of a cool down beginning next week. That's still a little long ways away. But the one thing we're not going to see over the next 5 days, Mike, we're not going to see anything in the way of heavy cloud cover and nothing in the way of any rainfall.
All right, let's get some of that good September weather in October. That works for me.
Right, yeah. One of these days we'll get it right. But enjoy what we have out
Well,
there.
It has not been a predictable weather year.
No, it hasn't. And, you know, when you were talking to your friend there in New Freedom, Pennsylvania, Harrisburg already up to 59 inches of rain for the year, and that already broke their annual record.
Oh, my goodness.
Harrisburg is just up the road from New Freedom there in southeast Pennsylvania, so they need the dry weather more than we do.
Well, and I forgot to ask her. She said they were going to get a freeze. Are they going to get a freeze?
No, I don't think so. I think they may get a light frost, but it doesn't look as cold as what was looking like earlier, so... I think they'll be okay. Most of the United States is going to go into a very tranquil pattern here over the next week.
Yay! Okay, Rick DeMaio Weather. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com. You can go to my website. Any TV appearances coming up?
Yeah, I'll be on Channel 2 next Sunday and the following Sunday after that doing some typical weather stuff. Hopefully it'll be nice and quiet.
Yeah, don't do that Jerry Taft and the Brad Miller stuff. All right, talk to you later next week.
See you,
bye-bye. And stick around for the second hour. Good stuff. Wait. I got to do this. Hold on. Let's try it again.
Do it again.
Okay. Take two.
All right. This hour of the Mike Novak Show has been brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed. It starts with the soil. And now, here he is, Mike Novak.
Police.
It's live radio.
It's
I love live
radio.
Radio.
The computer's
Woo-hoo!
Frozen.
It totally froze you out, didn't it?
It totally froze
me
out. Yeah. It's
much like dating in high school?
Yeah. It's completely like high school.
I couldn't resist because of the talk of your reunion earlier. Sorry.
Actually, speaking of that, I got a Facebook message from William Brown who says...
you should go.
You go to your high school reunion.
Yep.
You will only regret not
going. I didn't go to my 10-year, and I do regret it. But circumstances as they were at the time, I was very pregnant, and all my friends had my own, you know, gravitational pull. And all my friends who said they were going to go to from high school all canceled on me. And I'm like, I cannot show up at my reunion alone and pregnant. It was just too much for me to take.
Mm.
And at that time, girls tend to be emotionally sensitive. So it was like, I don't need to deal with that today. But my 15 or 20, whichever one comes next, I'm going.
You should.
I'm going.
Well, like I said, it's hard to know. My problem is I work on the weekends, mm-hmm. and everybody wants to do things on the weekends.
Yeah.
And I missed last weekend because I did this talk in St. Louis. In 2 weeks, I'm doing a talk in Traverse City, Michigan on the Saturday. And it's, I could drive back for 8 hours and get home at midnight.
Yeah.
And then do the show the next morning.
How long is a drive to Warren? Is that where the high school reunion is?
Yeah.
Your hometown, right?
It's Warren, Michigan. Uh-huh. It's about 5 hours, And if you want to pee along the way, it's six.
That tends to happen on road trips.
It does. And when it's me on a road trip, I'm stopping at a Panera along the way to check my email.
Yeah.
And that turns into an hour,
Being a gardening enthusiast, when you go by small, like orchards or like those little garden things that you see along, do you stop at all those too?
Sure. Roadside stands?
Yeah.
When we were coming back from St. Louis last week, it was so beautiful. I didn't realize this, that Illinois has a hidden treasure. And when you think of Illinois, you think of Chicago, you think of the cornfields. And those of you in the south part of the state think about, I'm sure, the forests around southern SIU and southern Illinois and what's going on. But we drove up. I said, okay, we could hit 55. I said, no, we're not doing that. 55 is like the most horrible, boring road ever. And I said, let's drive along the Mississippi and then we'll drive along the Illinois. There's a road, Illinois 100. Route 100. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
And it's got to be the best kept secret in the state. And when you start, it starts, if you cross the river Mississippi at Alton, I said, no, we're not going on the superhighway. We're getting off of that. And we'll follow this road and we'll go through Alton, Illinois, get into Illinois at Alton. And then we follow the Mississippi in 101, or rather 100, rather. I'm thinking 101 because that's U.S. 101 along the west coast goes up Pacific Ocean,
right,
which is beautiful. But here in Illinois, Route 100 goes up the Mississippi and then it follows the Illinois. And it's just, it was a beautiful sunny day. We're riding along. People, and there was a car show of old cars, vintage cars.
Yeah.
So we're driving along this road, along the Mississippi, and all these vintage cars are going the other way. And then there was along with us, these motorcycle guys were riding up. I mean, it was like a movie.
Yeah.
And it was just fabulous. And I'm trying to imagine what that's like with colors, tree colors on top of it. Because we were like a week or two early.
Yeah. And that's kicked in. They're going now, aren't they?
They really are. Yeah. As Rick DeMaio was saying, that the conditions are making the colors go a little earlier,
mm-hmm.
the strange weather we've had this year. So, Route 100. I'll bet there are a few other folks out there. It's Illinois 100, and I'll bet there's a few of you who have ridden that before. It was a surprise to me. It was a revelation, and I just thought, wow, this is not what you think of when you think of Illinois.
No, sadly, no. It's they do. They are like best-kept secrets.
Yeah, there are. Well, let's get
Beth and Jody.
Yes, Beth and Jody. I think it might be just Beth who did this last time. And in this hour, we'll go to Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm in Ottawa, Illinois, also a beautiful area. You find a river. That's what you do in Illinois. Otherwise, you got corn and soybean fields. But find a river, and that's where the cool stuff is. Stephen Packard will be here later in the hour to talk about the volunteer initiative next week, next Saturday at Deer Grove East. I had one other thing I wanted to mention because I got another Facebook mention. Let's get to it here. La-dee-doo. Hannah Dwyer said, I'm ordering the catalog. Can't wait for December now. Also, your segment about meat was great. So many people have no idea what the impact meat has on our environment. And then she writes, she posted a small clip on my page, and I haven't seen that. Maybe you have, Heather. She posted a small clip about the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma. Of course, that's Michael Pollan, who I would give my left arm to have on the show. We don't see it here. Is it on MikeNovak.net? Maybe it's on the Mike Novak show. Did she We're not seeing that, Hannah. Maybe it's on hers. I'll click onto that. But anyway, she writes about Michael Pollan. And yeah, if you want to pick up a great book about how we eat in America, and there's a lot of good stuff out there now, believe me, but Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma will really open your eyes to what happens in this country and how we devote so much of our farmland to meat and to farming that, to a large extent, is not sustainable.
If you're doing it that way.
In fact, that sounds like the perfect segue to go to Beth Osmond from Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm. How are you, Beth?
Great, Mike. Thanks.
I was wondering if you could comment on that, because here you are. You're raising farm animals, mm-hmm. selling them for meat, but you're doing it in quite a different way from what we call conventional farming, aren't you?
Absolutely.
And what would be the chief difference as you do this in your mind?
Well, the biggest difference is really we're raising animals the way our grandfathers would have raised animals. So in that sense, it is conventional. It is traditional.
Well, you know, that's a really good point, too, and is that the word conventional has been co-opted?
It has.
And the other thing that drives me crazy is if you read about the things that we eat on our plates, the fresh fruits and vegetables, they're now called specialty crops.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how did that happen? Wait, this is our food. This is not a specialty crop.
Absolutely.
But they're labeled specialty crop. And that, you know, it's like the Republicans, not to go into a political rant, but it's them co-opting certain words and making them, making you listen to them on their playing field.
Yeah.
So if somebody gets the idea that a specialty crop is, I don't know, a carrot, and then we have kind of lost the game, because the real crop is corn and soybeans then, that by process of elimination.
Absolutely. There's a great one of those memes going around Facebook that I've seen recently that says, you know, eat organic food, or as your grandparents called it, food.
Yes, Heather?
I just posted that on your Facebook.
Oh,
I swear
funny.
To God, I found that when I tagged it and reposted the, you know, try organic food, or as your grandparents call it, food. Just before you said that, I just posted it on Mike's page.
It's true. It's,
that's creepy.
It's eerie.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah,
she just put that.
It's a beautiful girl with a basket mm-hmm. of gorgeous produce.
And it's
yeah.
And if you look at the post right now, it says, a few seconds ago.
Yeah.
Wow, great minds thinking alike.
Yes.
Good. But that's where we start. You're doing what, as you said, what your grandparents did.
Yeah, we're raising food in a very traditional way. We've come to, like you said, conventional has come to be a substitute for industrial, which I think is a better word for the way that Big Ag is doing a lot of things. But what we do is we raise our animals in small groups. We raise a lot of our animals here on the farm. Some of the animals we sell are raised by neighbors, friends of ours who have been developing their herds for 20-plus years. They know these animals really well, and they care for them, and they breed high-quality animals, not only high-quality as far as the rate of gain and those things that an industrial farm will look for, but animals that are good mothers, so they'll breed well, animals that have good meat quality, so they taste amazing. And when you know your animals and when you know your business as well as that, you can produce some really fantastic food. And the other thing that we do that's really different from industrial ag is we cut out the middleman. You know, we raise it and we bring it to consumers. And, you know, the only step in between is it goes to a butcher, and we work with a terrific butcher. Down in Eureka, Illinois, it's the only organic certified butcher in the state. And although we're not organic certified, we know that that's just one more level of, you know, inspection and just high quality to high standards that they have. And so it's a really direct connection between people and what they're eating.
And are you able to raise your cattle and other animals on grass and the things that they would traditionally eat rather than corn?
Yes and no. You know, I know, and I agree with you, Michael Pollan is brilliant, and I love the Omnivore's Dilemma and food rules. My only difference of opinion there is he states categorically that cattle can't be healthy if they eat grain. They can. It's just a matter of quality and quantity. So our cattle do eat grain, but it's grain that's raised right there on the farm that they're being raised on. It's not trucked for miles. It's really high quality grain. It's not just whatever's cheapest on the market that month.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It doesn't include filler. It doesn't include all the just yuck that an industrial farm will fill in with.
And that's the technical term. Yeah,
that is the technical term. I think.
Yeah. Yuck. Well, okay. Now
at least it's the one I can say on the radio.
Yeah. Okay. But I understand what you're talking about. But that's a really good point. One of the things that we have to understand about the world we live in is that it's nuanced.
It is.
And it ain't black and white. Sorry. For all you folks who want it to be black and white, it ain't. And it's never going to be. And we all have to make choices. You know, I have this running debate with people right now over biosolids.
Mm-hmm.
And whether there's a place for them in horticulture and agriculture. And that's very controversial.
It is.
It's extremely controversial. But my feeling is if we don't find a place for them, we're going to be overrun with biosolids.
Mm-hmm.
We used to dump them in the ocean and put them in the landfills. Is that what we want to do? Or do we want to try to treat them and see if we can reuse that stuff,
mm-hmm.
to use the technical term?
Exactly.
And there are soil scientists I've talked to who say best place to use them is in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And other people say, are you kidding? What are you putting on our fields? So we have to have that dialogue. We have to talk about this. And so when Michael Pollan, you know, he's also a controversial figure.
Mm-hmm.
I love what he writes. He opens a lot of people's eyes. He's a communicator. He makes statements that people respond to, like you. And say, okay, yeah, I like what he's got to say in general, but in specifically, I can't live doing this. I can't do my operation, make my operation successful doing what he would require. Yes, there are people in the world who have been able to do that, but is it always necessary? And I guess what you're saying is no.
Well, like you said, there's nuance. You know, there's the ideal of, you know, cattle being raised by farmers on grassy hillsides and being butchered right there on site by a fifth-generation artisan butcher, and that would be lovely. But then there's a whole big spectrum between that and what ends up in the Jewel, you know, what ends up in the grocery store. And we're somewhere in the middle. We work as hard as we can to be towards that more sustainable, more responsible side. Part of what pushes us, you know, to use grain is what consumers expect, just the flavor and the texture of the grass-fed corn-finished, grain-finished beef. That's what we've been eating here in the Midwest for a lot of generations.
What is the flavor difference?
Well, the challenge with grass-feeding beef, especially in Illinois, where, you know, as you know, we do have seasons and the grass doesn't grow for a good part of the year. So to harvest the animals all year round or to butcher all year round, the ones that are raised, that are being butchered in the wintertime, their meat quality is going to be different because all they're eating at that point is hay or forage, and they're maintaining their weight as opposed to gaining weight.
Mm.
We do also sell some grass-fed beef. We call it our milk and meadow. And what we do with those is we take calves that are born in late winter, usually January, February, and they're never weaned. They're never taken off their mother cow. They stay on pasture until they're about 10 months old, and then they're butchered. Some people, you know, another term for it would be rose veal. It's a really young meat, but it's very tender. It's very flavorful. It doesn't have that marbling that we're used to seeing on beef, but it's a really high quality, and it's the one way we found to get a really consistent quality of grass-fed meat. But we can only butcher that in December. So that really would limit us as far as selling all year round, making that available to customers all year round.
Well, I know that grass doesn't grow all year in Chicago. You know how I know that?
How's that?
I watch Chicago Bear football games, all right?
Exactly.
That turf is... is never working.
You sure that's not a metaphor for something else?
I don't know.
Regarding them?
by the way, we're talking to Beth Osman from Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm. She and her husband, Jody, and their kids. It's out Ottawa Way, correct?
That's right.
You mentioned the magic word veal.
Mm-hmm.
And to some people... that is the epitome of evil.
It is, and that's why as when we sell our milk and meadow beef, we've chosen, I mean, like I said, technically because of the age of the animal, it could be called veal. But it's not raised in the way that people picture veal in, you know, little dog crates or something awful.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, these animals are never weaned. Like I said, they nurse up until the day that they're, you know, ready to go to the butcher. They're not even castrated. You know, they're intact. And because they're a young animal, that doesn't have an effect on the flavor. And so that's the way we've found to offer grass-fed beef that we're proud to put our name on. We know that the quality is going to be there. Because if we're demanding grass-fed beef all year round, then we get into, well, how far do we have to truck that beef? Or, you know, how do we keep that quality there? And so, like you said, everything is a nuance. You know, I find that it makes more sense for us to feed our animals grain that at this point is still raised conventionally. If we had organic, you know, trying to move, transition towards organically raised grain, but that's why our meats sound organic, but grain that's raised on the same farm as the animal versus grain that's brought in from, you know, 300 miles away. Both of those have choices as far as cost and as far as environmental impact. So you know, part of being sustainable for our business is really balancing all of those different factors, environmental impact, the cost to our customers, the profitability for our business, because it's not a sustainable business in any sense if we can't keep doing it, if we can't support our family running our business.
Well, you know, one of the trade-offs that you just mentioned, I think it's really important for people to understand. And listening to this conversation, if I'm you know, some people are squeamish, mm-hmm, about this whole thing. They're willing to go, as you say, to the Jewel and pick up the package as long as it's shrink-wrapped and it's got the,
yeah,
you know, there's the ground beef. Wow, I don't have to think about how that happened. But you talk about slaughtering calves and other things, and I'm sure a lot of people go, ew.
You know, my favorite question is, I always have people tell me, I could never eat animals I raised, you know. And my response to that is, I don't like to eat animals I haven't raised. Because I know that the animals that I raised, that we raised, how they were raised, how they were treated, how they were fed, how they were cared for, I know that those had the highest quality possible lives. And if you choose to become a vegetarian because you find it, you know, morally irreconcilable to eat meat at all, that's fine. But don't tell me that you can't eat meat that you raised, but you can eat meat that comes from a factory. But you just don't have to see it. You don't have to know how that animal was treated when it was alive.
You know, that's a really good quote. And the second you said it, Heather just sort of went, hmm? And she headed for the Facebook because I know she's going to put that quote up there.
I'm trying to remember it verbatim right now.
Well, when people tell me that they can't eat an animal that they had raised, I tell them that I don't like to eat animals that I haven't raised.
There we go. That is Beth Osman. I'm going to let you go in a second, but I know that you guys have been doing a lot of for one thing, you've got a CSA,
mm-hmm,
and you sell at The Logan Square Market, right?
Right. Jody's there today.
Well, see, that's the problem. I live in Logan Square, but I'm here.
You're here. Oh, no.
And I, every Sunday, I'm down here, and I miss the Logan Square Market. That's
it is
one,
a great market.
I know. It's a very good one, and it's very frustrating to me that I'm down here, and I can't be at the Logan Square Market because I would go over and say hello to Jody.
Well, in the wintertime, we do deliver to Logan Square. We deliver our meat CSA all year round. And in the wintertime in Logan Square, we drop off at Provenance Food and Wine, another great business in that neighborhood.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm going to have to head over there. And you're involved with a number of organizations. You wrote me this. I have to tell you, Beth, I don't know if you wrote it or Jody wrote it, but I just posted the whole thing. You sent me this letter with all these links and all this, and it's this great.
Jody gets credit for that one, yeah.
Okay, well, this great report on what you guys have been up to, and holy smoke. You do a lot of stuff. You're involved with the Illinois Local Food Farms and Jobs Council, the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, the Food Animal Concerns Trust, the White House Project's Go Run event in Northbrook coming up. You've got Crafts Farm Beginnings through Angelic Organics Learning Center, the Michael Fields Agriculture Institute. And on and on. How do you keep up with all this stuff?
We have a really full calendar, but we're really passionate about what we do. We love not only raising the animals, but communicating with people and telling them how they can get involved and why this is important. And so that those other kinds of outreach, whether we're training other new farmers through Kraft and Michael Fields, or whether we're working for public policy changes, those are really important to us. And I think that the people who have a really deep understanding of sustainability and agriculture, and not only agriculture the way we're doing it, but, you know, Jody grew up in a very conventional farm family. So we're able to see those nuances and try and bring other people, moving them along the continuum. It's not an us and them fight. Because if we make it us or them, there's a lot more of them than there are of us.
Jody's not the black sheep of the family, right?
He's not. No. But anyway.
I was going to make some, you know, really twisted joke, but I'm just going to leave it alone.
Yeah, we'll leave that. But so it's really important for us to be able to communicate both with other people in the agricultural industry, you know, people who have been farming for years and years, and people who want to get into it, and as well as people who eat. Another one of my favorite quotes is, you know, that eating is the most political act that each of us do every day. You know, we choose every time we go to the grocery store, every time we prepare a meal for our families versus going to McDonald's. We're choosing, and we're having an impact on the environment. We're having an impact on the way food is produced. And I think we all, you know, more and more people are becoming aware that those things have consequences.
You know, it's great that we have the shorthand in America and kind of on the left that, you know, you can say bad food equals McDonald's, bad agriculture equals Monsanto, mm-hmm. Bad oil equals
BP.
Exxon is where I was going to go, but
well, they're both kind of high up. They kind of tie each other.
But the point is, you're right. It's all political acts. Everything you do every day, and it's really hard to look down the line to the ultimate extension of it, or look back to the origin, I suppose, the other direction. You know, where's your meat coming from? Where's your oil coming from? Where's your corn coming from? Your high fructose corn syrup.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all important questions. Well, Beth, thank you so much. Always great to have you on the show. We'll keep in touch, and I'm hoping to meet you guys at the Logan Square Market some point.
That'd be terrific. Thanks for calling, Mike.
And all the information about Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm is up on my website, mikenovak.net. And the website, again, Beth, is of your farm, in case they want to go straight there right now.
www.cedarvalleysustainable.com.
www.cedarvalleysustainable.com. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Yeah, let's get Steven on board. And We got lots to talk about with him. Again, if you've got any questions or comments, 773-838-9278. I welcome whatever you have to throw at me. Now, if you didn't think Autumn was here last week, ha! And I'm betting the last couple of days have convinced you. Of course, as Rick DeMaio said, we're going to get warmer this week, which means there's a lot left to do in your Zone 5 garden before the snows arrive. In fact, each issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, there's a column called What to Do, which gives you great advice month by month. For October, the first bit of advice is to prepare for that first frost, as we said. You know, it's going to be coming and going. Certain areas, as Rick said, microclimates, you never know whether you're going to get it or the neighboring town's going to get it. Now, the first frost is going to kill your annuals, which you should then remove to keep diseases out of the soil next year. It's a little different with vegetables, since the initial frost is often followed, as I said before, by weeks of good growing weather. If you protect your tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers with newspapers, blankets, tarps, or floating row covers, you'll get more production. Then there's my column on the inside back page. It has been known to produce bloating, crossed eyes, and psychic distress. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. But it's a lot easier if you subscribe. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to ChicagolandGardening.com.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
So our report tells us that Stephen Packard is in the woods.
He is in the woods.
Standing by?
Standing by in the woods.
Standing by with a tin can and a string.
I would assume so.
That's what our phones sound like today,
yeah.
By the way.
Oh,
I don't know.
What's up with that?
I have no idea. Actually, I had somebody write to me recently and said, sometimes it's hard to hear the phone calls coming in. If it is today, I apologize, but the levels seem low and I've done everything I can do.
I asked, we could have someone, the person who might be able to fix it for us, who's available right now to fix it for us, says if he does what he thinks might work, we'll either solve the problem or lose the phones completely.
Let's go with what we got.
Exactly.
We'll go with that right now. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees and Illinois Extension. Here's something to think about if you're about to take advantage of the fall planting season. Sometimes trees are unhappy not because of insects or diseases, but because of other factors. A recent Extension Home, Yard, and Garden pest newsletter notes that among the things that can stress trees are, all right, now write this down, it's a list, improper planting, wrong planting zone, non-native plant species, incorrect soil type, compaction, that's a biggie, soil pH too high or too low, inadequate fertility, too much shade or sun, too wet or dry, crowded planting, construction after planting, sometimes construction before planting, or just not suitable for an urban setting. See, there's a lot that can go wrong even without insects and diseases. So the next time you think something can be solved by reaching for a spray can or a load of fertilizer, think about whether your tree is the right plant in the right place. And invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look, to get their opinion. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Make this your best gardening season yet. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Invest a bit of time now to ensure a bountiful harvest and beautiful landscape throughout the season. And include Milorganite, eco-friendly all-purpose fertilizer, as part of your formula for success. Use Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer in all your planting beds. The low-nitrogen, slow-release formula makes Milorganite goof-proof and good for the environment. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Available wherever garden supplies are sold.
No, that's not the one. I had the other one up. No. We're not going to that one. Hold on. See, I had the other one up, and it was supposed to go, all the technical stuff is fighting me this morning. The computer's freezing, the phones, now the CD. No, I'm winning this battle. There we go.
Out the corner of my eye, I saw a pretty little thing approaching me. She said, I never seen a man who looks so all alone. Could you use a little company? If you pay the right price, your evening will be nice and you can go and send me on my way. I said, you're such a sweet young thing, why you do this to yourself? She looked at me and this is what she said. Oh, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got
Yeah, no rest for the wicked. That's why we have Stephen Packard on the phone here, calling from somewhere in the deep woods in Cook County. How you doing, Stephen?
Am I the wicked that gets no rest?
You are. You are one of those people. But actually, you're probably not wicked. I just know you don't get a whole lot of rest because you're doing this all the time. When I talked to you yesterday, you were in the woods. You're in the woods again. Explain where you are.
Well, the buckthorn thinks I'm wicked. The invasive species definitely think I'm wicked. I'm in the middle of Somme Prairie Grove in Northbrook, Illinois, with a bunch of fraternity and sorority students from Northwestern and a whole bunch of volunteers of all ages gathering seeds, cutting brush, burning brush piles, and restoring health to a beautiful ecosystem.
And it's a great way to spend a Sunday in the Somme Woods. That's just one of the places you're going to be. And the reason you're on the show today is because you let me know about what you called a first of its kind volunteer initiative that's going to happen next week at Deer Grove East. And that's in Palatine. It sounds pretty exciting, and the way you described it to me, and I talk about it on my website, it's a different way to do that. That in the past, folks will go out to do restoration, and they've done it the old-fashioned way, which, you know, with shovels and loppers and hand saws, but this is a little different, isn't it?
This is really... We're sort of looking forward to a miracle next Saturday, October 8th. It'll be the first time that a funded, very richly endowed, scientific-based restoration with plenty of resources is joined with the human spirit of a volunteer initiative that... Right off the bat, these two will grow together. The Open Lands Project has funding, $2.5 million spent so far to get the place ready for the kind of creative attention that dedicated individuals can learn to give it. And we'll be accepting with great pleasure everybody who knows how to do restoration already, and teaching everyone who's interested how to restore health to 4 prairies, 7 woodlands, 23 ponds, and this beautiful forest preserve, hundreds of acres, Deer Grove East. And no one has, we've seen the miracle of groups coming together to adopt a site and do restoration and see for the wildlife, for the plants, trees, birds, dragonflies. But this one really has the opportunity to be an outstanding success because there's such good science has already gone into it, and there are resources available to do the heavy lifting. When you need a bulldozer, we've got a bulldozer. When we're looking for a person who can watch over one endangered species on a certain area where it needs particular help, that's where the volunteers will come in.
Yeah, the interesting thing that you've talked to me about is, you know, and I was a little surprised because you've got the heavy machinery going in there, and mostly, well, partly to take out the buckthorn, which was pretty thick. But you're using bulldozers and backhoes and that sort of thing, and you don't think about that with restoration. You think about that with construction.
Exactly.
But you're saying you're doing it a scientific way so that you can actually do this restoration, the gross restoration first, and then bring in the volunteers to do the delicate stuff, right?
These 23 ponds had been pretty much dried up. And the reason for that is that drain tiles were put in more than 100 years ago to make the land good for corn and soybeans. When the Forest Preserve District bought it, all that drainage was still there. So it took a lot of work to undo that and get these 23 beautiful permanent ponds, ephemeral ponds, sedge meadow marshes, et cetera, to get them back. So that was what the heavy equipment was used for, and also to clear. A volunteer crew can clear a quarter of an acre of buckthorn a day out from in the oak woods, but here there were hundreds of acres, and we didn't want to spend hundreds of years doing this. We wanted to. The habitat was almost too small for the animals that needed the quality habitat already. So big machines went in and cut the brush out of large areas of oak woods that were choked by it. There's still many acres. We'll be out there all winter burning brush piles as volunteers in places where we need to do especially careful work. But anything that we could do with heavy machinery, that's been done.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about I didn't realize when we talked before that the heavy machinery was used to take out the drain tiles. How do you identify where the drain tiles are?
There are experts at that, and they've people ought to come out next Saturday and see. We welcome everyone. We all have maps there showing where every drain tile was and every the people who've studied drain tiles, there's a whole science to it, and I don't know how to do it, but they know how to do it, and they found them, and we know they're gone because the water came back up in all these ponds, so now we have white egrets every day out there working along the edges of the ponds, and great blue herons, and lots of ducks, and waterfowl, rails, bitterns, so that's you need a backhoe to dig down and find out where these drain tiles are. Some of them are a foot or more in diameter, and it's taking a huge amount of water and putting it into floods when it should stay there and sponge up and nourish the ecosystem.
We're talking to Stephen Packard, and he's been involved with the National Audubon Society, Chicago region, has also been with Chicago Wilderness Nature Conservancy. He's, believe it or not, he's kind of an icon in the environmental community in Chicago, and I'm very pleased to have him on the show. Now, you talk about how it's kind of a first of its kind. Is it because of the way you're doing it or the people involved in this project?
Well, it's the combination of the well-funded component that does what machines and Forest Preserve districts and restoration contractors can do, and individual people who will come together as a community. Our goal on Saturday is to create a self-organized community of people who are dedicated to the ecosystem and who care. And we'll be out spending much of the fall looking for rare prairie and woodland seeds that you cannot buy for any amount of money. But we know places where they can be found, and we have experts who teach people how to identify them. It's sort of fun to get to know rare plants at the seed stage before you even know them at the blooming stage. And then some of those seeds will go to the Chicago Botanic Garden to help grow plants that will replenish the stock. And many of them will take it and just broadcast. The volunteers who gather them will process them so that they'll germinate well and then throw them to the wind at the end of fall across these beautiful landscapes at Deer Grove East and in winter while we're snug inside or out in the cold burning bonfires. These seeds will be lying there and soaking up water, thinking about spring, and then next spring, the spectacular ecosystem will begin to come back.
That's why you sort of called this, and I refer to it on my website, as ecosystem restoration as a fall and winter sport. Because,
right.
Yeah, you're getting folks out there, you work hard, you get good exercise, and you do something wonderful for this ecosystem, which was hidden, I guess. It was like there was a blanket over it or something, and now you're setting it free again.
And the local ecosystem is rarer than the rainforest as a surviving, high-quality ecosystem. It's not as well understood as it deserves to be by people who live around here. So anyone who loves seeds and plants, anyone who loves birds or dragonflies or butterflies, there's an important role in ecosystem restoration. It's partly an outdoor sport. It's partly an emerging discipline that is the Chicago region is ahead of the rest of the planet. People come here to study what we do because ecosystem restoration is needed everywhere.
I'm glad to hear that.
Some of the volunteers involved in this know as much as anyone in the world about the part that they've chosen to adopt, the type of expertise they've developed over. Many people stick with this for years.
And one of the things you point out that folks can do next week, they can show up to teach people how to be stewards, or they can show up to learn how to be a steward. You're going to have some wonderful experts there. You're one of them who's going to be there. Doug Stotz from the Field Museum is going to be there. Linda Masters, who's an open lands restoration ecologist. And Bill Koenig from the Forest Preserve District is going to be there as well. And what I love about what you're doing is people don't show up and then get lectured by these people. You walk with them and you do work with them, and then you get one-on-one training with them. That's a unique opportunity.
Yeah, people really appreciate it. We'll all be in small groups. You'll go with the expert of your choice, and you'll be able to discuss whatever it is that you'll walk through the ecosystem and learn about what the challenges are and how people have learned various approaches. And you may have some ideas of your own, and we like to hear them because very often people from different backgrounds would bring their own knowledge with them and make a suggestion that improves the project.
All right. I want to take one phone call before I let you go, Stephen, and that's Chris in Palatine, of course. Are you going to be there, Chris?
Oh, probably. I live directly across the street from Deer Grove West, and I must say I've been hiking in Deer Grove East and West for 8 years. When I first saw what happened, I thought it was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre with the way you went into the oak forest. And I'm getting accustomed to it now. But I wanted to ask you.
All right. Now, I'll warn you right now. This, again, the phone lines are really horrible today.
Okay.
And you're very low. And I know that Stephen can't hear you. And one thing I will say is that Stephen, he mentioned that when he first saw what you guys had done, he thought it was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That would be actually.
Many people did.
It was the Palatine Chainsaw Massacre.
Exactly.
So ask your question, okay. Chris, and I will repeat it for Stephen.
Okay. I am very concerned about Deer Grove West. I walk the Yellow Trail every day, and it's just overrun in so many areas, and the 25 or 30 volunteers who are there twice a month, can't do anything.
All right, I will bring that up. Thanks for calling, Chris. I appreciate it. He was saying, Stephen, he's worried about Deer Grove West. You guys are working on Deer Grove East. What about
That's
Deer
right.
Grove?
That's right. Deer Grove West is equally deserving, has a wonderful volunteer crew there already. It doesn't have the resources that Deer Grove East has. It would be great if it did. And the two of them together are well over 1,000 acres of irreplaceable, beautiful, natural ecosystem that's gone through a lot of degradation. And as Chris points out, Deer Grove West needs help too. There's a website for Deer Grove East. I recommend that people go to it. There's also one for Deer Grove West.
You know, I have the website for Deer Grove East, of course, and of course I just clicked on it on my, let me see, there it is. I've got it twice on my page on MikeNovak.net this week, and the first one doesn't work, but the second one does. I'll have to fix that. But yeah, you can go to Deer Grove East. It's www.deergroveeast.net. I will also try to get the Deer Grove West site up. And Stephen, I got to let you go, but next week, refreshments at 10 a.m. You can, and then 10:15, the informational program. 10:30, the tours begin. Dress for weather or possible wet or muddy ground. 11:30 a.m. Return for refreshments. So it's not going to take your whole day. And then you've got the Q&A and meet the experts. And then additional tours start at noon for interested parties. And I'm hoping that folks in the Palatine region and all over Cook County and the area come by to help you with this, as you said, first-of-a-kind restoration.
Mike, thanks so much for plugging it on the show. You've got a great audience, and we look forward to seeing many people out there next Saturday at 10.
I hope so, too. All right, take care, Stephen.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's quickly go to line three, and I believe it's a buddy of mine. Vicki, are you there?
I'm here, Mike. Hello.
Hello, Vicki Nowicki.
I've been listening to your conversation with Stephen. It's absolutely stunning, moving, and such a beautiful story.
It's great, you know, that the Open Lands does such good work.
Yes, they do.
In the Chicago area. Oh, my goodness.
As you know, I work with homeowners exclusively, and it's kind of a metaphor, if you don't mind my saying, for our home gardens, if people would take a minute and evaluate their own landscapes and realize that they could also reveal a miraculous bit of the natural world by kind of, stop using chemicals, remove their lawns, and step back and see what they could discover also within their own backyard.
That's a really good point, because not everybody, you know, in the suburbs has cattle grazing on their lawns. Not everybody. But
that's the comment I wanted to make. I was just absolutely stunned by the data you were giving earlier about the acreage that is in vegetables in the United States. I knew that we were mostly growing corn and beans, which, as you mentioned, goes into commodities, which, by the way, are made into junk food mostly, which makes us sick. and then only 3 million acres in vegetables.
Yeah.
And I got to thinking that there is about the number of acres in the square mileage of Pennsylvania in mown lawn across the country, and a lot of that is in our backyards. And we do have still the potential of homeowners getting into the mix and growing some vegetables organically. And, we still do have the opportunity to grow some local organic food ourselves. And we can do it without, Washington passing any laws or the big multinational corporations making changes in what they're doing.
Well, you know, I agree with that. I think it's time we just bypass those people because they're not listening anyway. Really?
Well, just... I didn't want to say anything about that.
Well, no, let's just go do an end around. I mean, even to a great extent, Obama's not listening when it comes to certain parts of the food agenda. We do it ourselves, plant it in our lawns. Vicki, I think it's a great point. I need to get to one other subject here, and I thank you so much for the phone call.
It's great to talk to you, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
And I should tell people to go to libertygardens.com, right?
Great. That sounds great.
Okay.
One other thing that would add to it would be to store some food, and that's another way of adding to the amount of food that we can be eating. Okay, bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Let's also go to the phones. And Lori in Chicago, you have a question about recycling. Is that right?
Yes, I do. I want to know, what is the process? And can I go on a tour of a recycling facility to learn and see what they're doing?
That's interesting. It's not unheard of, that's for sure. I don't know exactly how that would be set up. Now, do you live in a single-family home or
yes.
High-rise or what?
A home.
Do you have a blue cart yet?
Yes.
Oh, you're lucky, one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, we're in the 18th Ward.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's what's going on. I'm going to let you go, and I'll explain. You know what? I actually want to do a tour of a facility, and let me check on that. I'll tell you what. Do me a favor.
I would love that.
Write to me, mike@mikenovak.net. Let me do a little investigating on this. And, I know that, newspaper people do and media people do, but I know that there are places that you can actually watch how this is done. To get the general public there, and let me find this out, and then I can announce it on the radio.
Yeah, I have friends too that are interested.
Fabulous! So we'll get a party and we'll go watch recycling.
Okay.
All right, great. Thanks for calling.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye. Well, I'm glad she called because it takes me to my final subject today, which is recycling in Chicago. Starting tomorrow, what so-called managed competition is going to start that Mayor Rahm Emanuel has instituted. And it starts by dividing the city into six service areas, which actually was done under Richie Daley. The difference being that Richie was going to privatize all of them. And Rahm has said, okay, two of them can continue to be streets and sand workers, union workers, city union workers. The other four areas will be private contractors. Three of those areas go to waste management. And one of those areas goes to Sims Metal Management Municipal Recycling. And starting tomorrow, four areas in Chicago are going to be picked up by private haulers. And the idea is that for 6 months, there's going to be a competition. And at the end of the 6 months, we'll see who's doing it most cost-effectively. Now, I'm with the Chicago Recycling Coalition. I'm the president. Full disclaimer, I don't make any money doing that. Our concern about it is whether this is a fair competition and it's going to be transparent. You know, what are the criteria for the managed competition? So we're going to be keeping an eye on that. And I think you should go to chicagorecycling.org. And if you go to my website, you'll see the map on my homepage, mikenovak.net. If you live in Chicago and you have Blue Cart, you should be looking at this map because your date of pickup or your day of pickup might be changing starting tomorrow. I know there hasn't been, and you should have received a mailer this past week. Now, not everybody is paying attention. It gets mixed up in the mail. It's under the newspaper. You don't know. But don't be surprised, because you might have a new hauler as of tomorrow, and you might not be aware of it. So I think you should go to chicagorecycling.org and read up about it if you live in the city of Chicago. If you have any complaints, there's a Facebook page for Chicago Recycling Coalition, and you should post on it.
I posted it on your Facebook show page and on your Twitter. The Recycling Coalition's website.
And I'm going to be keeping track of this as we go along over the next 6 months, because we want to make sure recycling comes to Chicago. We want it efficient. We want it transparent. And we don't want it on the backs of our workers. Enough said. End of program. I don't know if I'm going to be here next week. We'll figure out if I go to my reunion. Who knows? All right. Until then, go green or...
go home.